Well, good morning, church. Man, it's good to see y'all this morning. Such a great time of worship together. As always, it's a great thing to be a part of a family of God that loves to worship and loves one another. And certainly thankful for Tommy's hand and leading our worship this morning. And thankful for your presence, whether you are here in person or you're joining us online. We want you to know you're a valuable part of our community. There's a lot of people I know that are struggling now. There's a lot of illness going around. My daughter's out sick. My dad is sick. I know Marcus has been really sick, and we need to keep him in our prayers. Keith Holt had surgery this week. He's recovering from shoulder surgery, and so many others with illnesses and surgeries. Just a lot of folks we need to be thinking about and praying about and helping in any way that we can. But we're thankful that you are well enough to be with us this morning. How many of you have heard of the story of Juan Ponce de Leon? Ponce de Leon? This guy, you remember him? This guy right here. This is Juan Ponce de Leon. This is actually him. And he begged and persuaded the king of Spain to grant him some men to search for the infamous Fountain of Youth. You've heard that story? It started early in life. It says he grew up kind of poor, but he gets into the army, gets through the war with some acclaim. He goes out in search of fame and fortune on the seas. He is with Christopher Columbus on that voyage to the New World. When they found that, he comes back later. He eventually finds Dominican Republic. He is governor of the eastern province there, Costa Rica. He gets governor there. So he eventually he's got quite a bit of status, but he gets replaced by Christopher Columbus's son as the governor of Costa Rica. And so he's got this new idea. He's going to go find this Fountain of Youth. And according to the myth, it would make the drinkers of this water forever young. I asked Tommy to lead that song, the Rod Stewart Forever Young song. He couldn't find it, but I'm sure you know it. So we'll sing that next Sunday, maybe. Anyway, make the drinkers of this water forever young. And in this quest, he eventually becomes the first, at least European, discoverer of Florida, which he names Pascua de Florida, which means Feast of Flowers, because he lands in Florida on Easter Sunday. And that's the name of the Spanish Easter holiday, is the Feast of Flowers. And so he names it after Easter. So that's probably the story you've heard, or at least some version of the story that you've heard before. Whether it's actually true or not is a matter of some debate among scholars. And I'm going to give you the alternative. And it was not a version that I'd heard. There are some believe that the Fountain of Youth story that we've all come to know and love was actually concocted by a Spanish court chronicler. This guy was actually friends with Diego Columbus, Christopher Columbus's son, who replaced Ponce de Leon as the governor of Costa Rica. They were rivals. And so this guy, who was a court chronicler and a friend of Diego Columbus, he liked Ponce de Leon so much that he wanted to portray him as some dim-witted, egocentric, gullible guy, and he writes a book. And in his book, he talks about how Ponce de Leon gets deceived by the natives, goes on this wild goose chase for a fountain of youth. In other words, he made up the story to make Ponce de Leon look like a fool. Now, in our modern story here, we're hearing this story of a fountain of youth. We know that's just silliness. Who would ever go searching for water that would make people young? We see the story for what it is. It's a fool's errand, right? We know there's no fountain of youth because that's just scientifically impossible. It's just foolishness. But on the other hand, we are suckers for a good story, even an unbelievable story, if it's a story we want to hear. In Las Vegas, you may have heard of this. I had not heard of this. This is called the Synergetics Medical Institute. Anybody heard of that? So the Synergetics Medical Institute describes itself as the world's largest age management practice. And for a hefty fee, and I do mean hefty, it will help you live as long as possible in your body. They will feed you, they will exercise you, they will monitor you, they will drug you, they will adapt you to live as long as possible. You go and you see their ads, and there's guys like in their 70s who are bodybuilders and women who are like supermodels in their 80s. I mean, it's just crazy. And so their thing is, rather than accepting death, the followers of Synagogue seek to become amortals, not immortal, not trying to live forever, but live way longer than you should be expected to, right? And that's what they advertise. They've got a whole bunch of products. If you just have money you don't love and you want to see some go away, you can go and find all the Synagogue products you want to buy and then some. So this belief, this longing, this drive we have to dodge death, it's like written into the very fabric of certainly our culture, but sometimes even deeper than that. It's just like who we are, right? We want to stave off aging and death as long as possible. I mean, we live in a culture that idolizes youth and beauty and health, and so we say we don't pay any attention to that, but it affects us. And that message that we're getting in culture, that what matters is youth and beauty and health, that stands in really direct opposition to the story of Scripture, especially the advice we see in the book of Ecclesiastes, which we've been studying on these Sunday mornings. But there's a reason we're suckers for the stories, right? There's a reason that we want to believe the fountain of youth. There's a reason that we want to believe that the Synagogue Institute has actually found a way to keep us from aging. And there is a reason that we need to hear this advice from Ecclesiastes. You see, growing old makes a body and an inner self part company, they say. As one ages, the other stays young. And so it can leave you feeling disconnected from your very selves. Like, you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, that's not me, that's an old person that's taken over my body. I love this quote. It says, inside every old person is a young person wondering what happened. Right? At some point, we begin to struggle to do things that earlier in life were just, didn't even have to think about it. Our arms and our legs and our hands and our feet, they just don't operate the way they're supposed to. And don't even get me started on our backs. Even though this process is usually gradual, it happens, you know, over a period of months and years and even decades. It happens kind of slowly. It does not feel as if it happens slowly. Youthfulness leaves just so quickly. And we're left with that feeling of disconnectedness. We're disconnected from society. We are disconnected from more relationships. We are even disconnected from the very bodies we inhabit. We just feel that's not us. I don't see myself in culture. I don't see myself in these relationships. And I don't see myself in this body. So how should we be navigating aging? What should our attitudes be? Or, to put it in the language of Ecclesiastes, how do we live life meaningfully while facing death honestly? And this is the question that Ecclesiastes really grapples with throughout a lot of the book, but especially here at the end, and we are at the end of Ecclesiastes for those of you who are tired of hearing that. We're at the very end, and we're starting chapter 12. And really, this argument or this advice begins at the end of chapter 11, which we'll come back to in a minute. But we're going to pick up here in chapter 12, the very first few verses. And this is one of those passages that is particularly depressing in Ecclesiastes, at least when you can sort of decipher what he's saying here. So we're going to read through it and think about it. Just, You can read along, or you can close your eyes and listen. But this is a poem about aging. He says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Approach when you'll say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop. When the grinders cease because they are few. And those looking through the windows grow dim. By the way, looking through the windows grow dim, your eyesight's failing, right? When the doors of the street are closed and the sound of grinding fade, now it's not just your sight, now it's also hearing. When people rise up at the sound of birds, but the songs grow faint, I can't hear the birds anymore, right? When people are afraid of heights and the dangers of the street, things you used to didn't think anything about. I mean, I remember as a kid jumping off my roof and I thought that was great fun. When the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along, you know how in the fall you see insects that were so active in the summer, and then later in the fall as it's getting colder, you could just walk up and have a wasp crawl slowly on your hand without any fear. Just the grasshopper's dragging it. Don't do that, by the way. But a grasshopper, you make it do that. A grasshopper drags itself along. Desire no longer is stirred. Then people go to their eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Remember him, remember your Creator, before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl, for the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Have you ever wished, I mean, if I can, people talk about superpowers, some people would like to be super strong or be able to fly or be invisible or read people's minds, all these great superpowers. If I could have a superpower, it would be to communicate with my younger self. I would love to be able to know then what I know now. And I'm sort of in the middle. I'm not really young and I'm not really old, though my kids think I'm really old. I'm not that old yet, but I wish already that I knew then what I know even now. Younger people, when older people give you advice, you just need to know this, that they are telling you what they wished they'd known when they were your age. That is a lot of advice that is being given out. It's like, well, I sure wish someone had told me this. And the truth is, somebody may have told you this, but we didn't really believe them. You didn't really drink it in. And as the aging preacher of Ecclesiastes is writing, that's exactly what he's doing. He's like saying, this is what I wished I had known when I was younger. These are the words of wisdom I wish someone had told to me. And so if you go back to the very beginning of Ecclesiastes, it opens with a poem about the cycle of the earth. You know, kingdoms rise and fall, and people are born and they grow old and they die, and relationships burgeon and then they fail, and it's just all about the cycle of life, the cycle of this world, the cycle of nature. And now here we are at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, and he's like on the other end of the cycle. He is at the end where he has was born and he's grown old and he's gone through all these things in life, and now he's looking back at that. The young have risen up and grown old and getting ready to return to the dust of the ground. And so he talks about youth right here. It's a relative term. I would not be really comfortable calling myself young, but in certain crowds, I'm a young person. And so I might be, in this poem, I might be considered young, because I think he's talking really to anybody who hasn't entered that stage of sharper decline when the faculties really start failing. And what he urges the youth to do is to seize life by the horns with both hands and to do so while they still have the opportunity to do so. It's like this winter. We're coming into winter, right? And we're going to hit this period of time when it's cold outside and it's rainy and it's cloudy, and and it's like standing at the window and you're at the 10th day in a row of no sunshine, and it's unpleasant outside. There's wet dampness in the air and maybe fog. I don't know. It just feels like it's just like you don't want to be outside. And you're looking at that and you're remembering what it was like back in the late spring or in summer whenever the sun was bright and there was all this warmth and the plants were blooming. And I mean, there was flowers on that tree over there and the waters were running in this beautiful creek down here instead of being all dried up or frozen over. And so he's thinking about that, and he's looking back and wishing, boy, I wished I had enjoyed that warmth and that beauty even more back in those earlier days. There's a saying that youth is wasted on the young and that honeymoons are wasted on people who don't have any kids. And maybe you've heard that, but it's not a derogatory statement about the young. It's not that young people aren't worth celebrating or that they shouldn't have a good time or anything like that. It's just saying that when you're young, you can't really understand, you can't really appreciate it because you don't know how good you have it. You don't have a stage of comparison, right? When you're young and you're full of life, words like death and old age don't even have real meaning. Not for you, maybe for other people, but not for you. Life feels like an endless journey where you've got like all these just endless possibilities laid out in front of you. And what the preacher is saying is from an older person's vantage point, you look back and you realize that is not endless possibility in front of you. In fact, those possibilities are severely limited. You only have a certain amount of days and weeks and months and even years where you can take advantage and even see those opportunities. So the preacher's advice is not, you're young, but don't forget one day you're going to be old. And that's the way some older people hand out advice, is kind of in a derogatory way. That's not what the preacher's saying. Instead, what he's saying is, you're young, so make the most of it with every fiber of your being. You are young. You have a gift. Appreciate it and enjoy it. To every person who has the capacity to do so, God says, rejoice and be happy and find joys in the days when you can be physically and mentally and relationally active, because one day your capacity, your ability, and even your desire to do those things, that's all going to go away. Now, the great shock of Ecclesiastes is not just that here's an older person talking to a younger person and saying, live it up. The great shock is that he issues this advice in the form of a command from God. It's a command from God to rejoice and enjoy your life. Enjoyment is a command. God is that invested in your happiness. Listen to what God says at the end of chapter 11 in the same vein of thought. He says, you who are young, be happy while you're young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Now I read that like this, God's going to bring you into judgment part right there. And I immediately think about like a parent talking to a teen, right? Go have fun, kids, but not too much fun. Something along those lines. And it is possible that's what he's talking about. He could be saying, you know, enjoy life, but don't get so caught up in enjoyment that you turn your back on God. And most often, that's the way we would probably read and interpret this. But in this context, I don't think that's what he's actually saying. I don't think that's the best way to interpret this verse. I think a much better interpretation, I think it's more likely that what the preacher is actually saying is that our enjoyment of God's world, or our lack of enjoyment of God's world, is one of those things God is going to call into account on the day of reckoning. That God is going to say, I gave you this whole wide world and all these opportunities. What did you do with them? Did you enjoy what I gave you? Imagine that, you know, we got Christmas rolling around right here, and and somebody makes a sacrificial gift for you. I mean, like, really does something awesome for you. Maybe they give you an heirloom, or maybe they go out and buy something grand. They make this big gesture as a gift for you. And then next Christmas rolls around, they're going to ask, did you enjoy the blank? Did you enjoy the vacation I gave you, or the car I gave you, or did you enjoy the money I set aside for you to do this, or did you enjoy, right? They're going to make, if they make a big gift, they're going to want to know that you appreciated it and enjoyed it. And what he's saying is God is telling you to go out. He has given you this world, this good and beautiful world to enjoy. And he's going to ask you, did you take advantage of that? But sometimes that's not the way we think about God. We think about God issuing commands as a list of do nots. In other words, your pleasure is a divine decree. God wants you to enjoy life while you can, because for two reasons. For one reason is you're going to reach a stage in life where enjoyment becomes much more difficult. And secondly, because the enjoyment of life has an expiration date. This life does not go on forever. So enjoy it while you have it. Now, in the American film classic Toy Story 3, we essentially see these two philosophies sort of battle it out side by side. And if you have seen the movie, you're going to get this. If you haven't seen the movie, I'll try not to give any spoilers. All right, so on the one hand, you have a classic toy collector, and he sees these old toys that have just been played with, and he's like, oh, those are so valuable. And so what he wants to do is get all these classic toys and to keep them perfect and pristine, and he fixes them up just perfectly and puts them in these hermetically sealed boxes to be put away and looked at but never used or played with or touched or anything like that. He just wants to keep it all nice and clean, right? On the other hand, you have a kid with these toys. He just wants his toys to be played with. He wants toys to, you know, run around in the bushes and get dirty and go on all these adventures. And in other words, he wants the toys to do what toys were created to do. Now, we have those two philosophies with our lives. There are some people in life who are intent on sucking the joy right out of life. And older people, you know, it's a real temptation as we get older to be bitter, right? It's a real temptation to look at people who are able to do what we are no longer able to do and be bitter about that. Younger people even can have this bitterness if someone else has talents or abilities or opportunities that they don't have. But bitterness is definitely one opportunity that's out there. To take life and say, I'm just not going to mess it up, right? And Christians, we have been especially guilty of this. Just don't do anything. That's the main philosophy. Just don't do anything. Because everything is a risk. Don't get out and enjoy things, because things might go south. Things might go sideways. But that's not what the advice the preacher gives us. Your life was not made to be kept clean and pristine on a shelf. Your life was created by God to run around and get dirty and go on so many adventures. So, I've heard this particular passage used in a lot of different sermons before, and it's always aimed at young people. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, right? And which basically means young people, don't go do something stupid. That was the sermon I got. Did y'all get that one? Yeah. That remember your Creator in the days of your youth is just about don't do bad stuff. That's the lesson I got. But that's not what he's saying here at all. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth means remembering God made you in a good world. That's what remembering your Creator is. God made you in a good world. And you were meant to enjoy that. And yes, our sin spoils that world, but our God is the great Redeemer. God takes even the worst things we have done and does great things with it. How do you age with grace? How do you grow old and face death honestly, like we were talking about? It's by living life to its fullest and appreciating every moment of it. That's not just an optimum thing or for people who have ideal circumstances. That is a command for you and me and for everyone under God, on God's green earth, to appreciate the gifts he has given us. That is a command. God loves you and wants the best for you that much that you enjoy what he has given you. So whether you can actually go out and run around and do everything now, or your life has reached a stage where you're limited in those abilities and capacities, enjoy whatever God has put in front of you. And we can face life with dignity and celebration and enjoyment, even while knowing it is limited by our mortality. This morning, if you need prayers for encouragement or strength, if you want to live life better and you need help doing that, whether it's for forgiveness or maybe just direction or assistance, we want you to know we're here for you. And if we can pray for you, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?